Well, today we are talking federal issues. Of course, it's a new day in Washington, D.C. Both the House and the Senate are being controlled by Republicans at this point. And Iowa Senator Charles Grassley is going to be joining us today. Senator Grassley, are you there with us?
I am here. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
All righty. We're a little bit early today, and I am very happy that you are able to be here. And we're right on time. You are always on time. So we're on time today. We're taking the Chuck Grassley hint. How's that?
Well, thank you.
Well, I want to say again a Happy New Year, Senator, and it is a new day out in Washington, D.C. Well, how does it feel? Are we going to get some things done?
Well, let me tell you, we're going to advance the ball. Now, that's not saying much to satisfy your constituents or my constituents and your listeners at this point, but let me explain it this way. There were 370 bills passed the House of Representatives the last 2 years, that Reid never brought up in the United States Senate. Normally, we would have, I don't know whether it's 100 or 200, but it doesn't matter compared to 20 roll call votes. We would normally have many, many roll call votes on amendments. 20, for 12 months, we only had 20 roll call votes. So basically, what I'm trying to tell you is that Reid shut down the United States Senate as a body to produce legislation for one of two reasons, or accomplishing both with shutting down the Senate. One, he didn't want a lot of tough votes for his members up for re-election, and they lost anyway, or else he was trying to protect the president from having to veto bills. Now, what I can tell you is this. From a process standpoint, and again, I don't say this to satisfy your constituents because they're more interested in results, but from a process standpoint, the Senate is going to be a productive body from this standpoint. We're not going to have the majority leader, meaning the Republican leader, not allow Democrat and Republican amendments like Reid did. Reid controlled the amendment process. We're going to have a budget. The 1974 law requires a budget every year. We've had one budget under Reid's leadership of 7 or 8 years. So the budget, we're going to adopt a budget. We're going to have amendments. Oh, the other thing that to tell you is, he would not allow debate by offering a motion to shut off debate before it ever started. And we're going to, in other words, let me sum up these three points. The Senate is going to be a deliberative body, like the Constitution writers intended, like James Madison said in the Federalist Papers, that the Senate ought to serve a function very differently from the House of Representatives. So what does that do for your constituents that want results? We're going to get bills to the president. If the president vetoes them, probably we're going to have the status quo if we can't get two-thirds vote to override, and that's going to be difficult. So that's what I can say how things are going to be different. I hope the results are different. The process is going to be different. The results are going to be different from the standpoint of the Senate passing bills. From the standpoint of will the president sign them, that's a big if.
Let's talk about one of the big issues, that Keystone Pipeline, Senator. The president still is very hesitant no matter what happens on that. Do you think with the support of both of these bodies now that this is going to go through?
Yes. We're going to start debate today on it. We're going to vote on advancing the bill today. Then there will be Democrat and Republican amendments like Reid would not allow. And we have at least 62 or 63 votes. So we've got the 60 supermajority you need to advance the bill. Then will the president sign it or veto it? If he vetoes it, I doubt if we can get 67 votes to override the veto. But I'm sure we ought to try, at least, and put everybody on record. Do you agree with the president and create 42,000 jobs or not create any jobs? Or do you believe the Congress on a bill that would create 42,000 jobs?
It seems like a perfect opportunity, Senator. As you mentioned, once you can get a functioning Senate now, so you get a functioning House, functioning Senate, and to get some, you're not going to get everything, but if you can get some compromise and some things working with the president, do you think this president will allow that?
Well, first of all, there'll have to be some bipartisan compromise or nothing's going to get done in the United States Senate. Now, Reid didn't have to worry about compromise because he didn't want to pass anything. Republicans want to get bills to the President of the United States. We got 54 Republicans. So if you're ever going to get 60 votes to advance a bill, you're going to have cooperation from six Democrats. And that doesn't mean six Democrats just buying in to what the Republican majority wants. Well, sometimes that might be the case. But in most cases, it means that you accommodate some thought from the other side of the aisle, which Reid would never do, and which the Senate is intended to do, because unlike the House of Representatives, and in the House of Representatives, a majority, be it Republican or Democrat, can ignore the minority. But in the United States Senate, when it takes 60 votes and you don't have one political party having 60 votes, you can't ignore the minority. So minority views are protected in the United States Senate. And so Republican majority is going to have to accommodate to some extent Democrat amendments and the tweeting of some legislation in order to make sure we got the supermajority you have to have. And that's the role of the United States Senate. And then the president is finally going to have to make some decisions, where Reid's leadership allowed Obama to avoid in the previous year. The president's going to have to say yes or no to certain pieces of legislation that he was protected from in the past.
Would you imagine that that would include perhaps some tweaking of this health care reform bill?
Yeah, and you know, I use the word tweet instead of tweaking.
Yep.
So you should have corrected me.
That's okay, Senator. I knew what you meant, but the tweaking, yeah, that's what it reminded me
okay,
of.
Okay, now your question again, because I got off track.
That's okay. The tweaking of health care reform, would you imagine that's going to happen?
In the first round of debate on Obamacare, it's going to be, I think, probably entirely political. In other words, Republicans are going to try to repeal because we promised the voters we would repeal. If that bill goes to the president, and will only go to the president if we get at least six Democrats that want to send it to the president, then he vetoes it and nothing changes. But then you get to some things that surely the president knows has to be changed, because he's already, by executive order, some of it probably unconstitutional or illegal, some of it probably legal. He had leeway to do it. But 38 times he's changed Obamacare in the last 4 years. So he surely knows that there's things wrong with Obamacare. And maybe on those issues, we can work out some compromises that he might sign.
All righty. And, Senator, we do have a caller standing by. We have Ron on the line. And, Ron, you are on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, I was wondering why they let Harry Reid stick his finger in their eye again on the budget deal when they could have waited 2 weeks and got it through.
Can you repeat that?
Yep, I sure will. Ron, thanks for the question. What he was wondering is, on the budget deal, why the Senate didn't wait a couple of weeks until you took that up instead of allowing him to have his fingers in the pot, so to speak.
Well, there was why we didn't wait a couple of weeks, because of the end when we get a new Congress. Well, I know why the guy asked the question, do something about the executive orders. And in that particular case, we did just exactly what the caller suggested. In the areas where we wanted to stop the president from issuing executive orders, we did not pass a bill till the end of the fiscal year. That's the Department of Homeland Security. In every other area, there wasn't dispute with the president, so we thought fund the government through the rest of the fiscal year, And on Homeland Security, we did that just till March the 1st, because now in January and February, with a Republican majority, we can put restrictions on the expenditures of the bill of the Homeland Security, so that his executive orders won't be able to have the money to carry them out. If we had done it the other way, do like the author said, or the caller said, wait a couple weeks, we would have had government shutdown from December the 11th until we got back on January the 6th. And we learned in October of 2013, that shutting down the government doesn't save money. Consequently, we didn't want to make that same mistake again.
I want to talk a little bit about immigration, Senator. I know you and I have talked about this as well. Do you see this one coming up first and central, or do you see anything getting done on that one?
Well, as I just told the caller, I assumed that he was concerned about the Homeland Security and the president's executive orders. If he isn't, he ought to call back and tell me what he was more concerned about. And so on that one, the first immigration is going to be on the Department of Homeland Security funding for the rest of fiscal year, the restrictions we put on that to stop it from funding the unconstitutional executive orders on legalization. Then the House of Representatives is soon going to pass some immigration legislation. The Senate, I've taken the position as leader of the Senate committee that we passed an immigration bill. By the way, I voted against it because it didn't secure the borders. But I took the position that we spent several months on one 2 years ago. So why waste the Senate time if it isn't going to be brought up in the House? So wait for the House to pass it, not just one bill like we did in the Senate, one gigantic bill of 1,100 pages, I believe. Pass more piecemeal and look at these in a segmented fashion where we can get some agreement of what needs to be done. And when the House passes it, then we will take it up at the appropriate time. I don't think there's any doubt that if the House passes a bill, the Senate's going to work on it. Where we end up, I don't know, but I think we got the capability of passing several pieces of legislation because there's some agreement on legislation needs to be passed. But the main agreement is to secure the border. And unless you secure the border, it doesn't do much good to do anything else on immigration. But we also got to agree that two things. One, the president isn't enforcing existing law, particularly on interior enforcement. And secondly, we do have a broken immigration system.
And again, I want to remind our audience, today we are talking with Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. And if you do have a question for the senator, you can give us a call here at 690-1370. Senator, I want to talk a little bit about your chairmanship, the Senate Judiciary Committee. And first of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And second of all, the agenda. What's the priority for you here?
Well, a priority once the House acts. And by the way, on immigration, I didn't say this. I've talked to the House Committee Chairman, and they're pretty inclined to work on immigration this year. A high priority for me, but it's not a highly visible priority, but it's something that I've been involved in even as an individual, even before I get to be chairman of committees, in the constitutional responsibility of Congress to do oversight to make sure the president faithfully executes the laws. And those are words from the Constitution. And that's called oversight, congressional oversight. And I'm going to spend a great deal of time on oversight. Then within legislation, now I'm going to give you some things that we might deal with. I don't know whether we'll deal with them first or before the House or after the House. But various things would be patent trolling or patent reform, things dealing with juvenile justice reform. But the very first thing we have to do is the new attorney general nomination. And then soon after that, the deputy attorney nomination. And then we just get scads of judges retiring and the president filling those vacancies. And so we have to do a lot of judges. I don't know how much time we spend on judicial nominations, but I would guess, according to my staff, about a third of the time. And then we have to change the Freedom of Information Act so people have access to the information that's denied them by the administration under a long-time piece of legislation called FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. Reform that so people get their information faster.
Senator, of all the committees, is this one that you really did cherish to become chairmanship?
Yes. I suppose for kind of a personal historical reason, I'll be the first non-lawyer to chair a committee that was set up way back in the early 1800s.
And I think that's exciting, Senator, because it still says that citizens can go into government and they can certainly put their hand in and help things out. We do have a caller standing by. We do have Bob on the line. And, Bob, you are on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, I've got a question with the amendment process. Can it be changed so that the amendment that going on a bill actually has to pertain to that bill?
Okay, Bob, thanks for the question. We'll go. Senator, did you hear the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
What he suggested is very astutely followed under the rules of the House of Representatives. But in the United States Senate, we have a process that allows what we call, I can't think of the word, amendments that are directly related to the bill and unrelated amendments. That's not the language I should use.
Okay.
But anyway, until 60 votes have been passed, until a 60-vote margin's been voted to cut off debate, you can have both the word I should have thought of was germane and non-germane amendments. So let me start over again.
Okay.
In the case of you open a bill up, then to answer Bob's question, you can have both germane and non-germane amendments. And the word non-germane applies to the language that Bob used unrelated to the underlying bill. But once you invoke cloture, it's called, 60-vote margin to stop debate, then you can only have germane amendments in order. So the Senate operates differently than the House of Representatives, based on the proposition that any senator ought to be able to offer any amendment and no majority should keep any subject from coming before the United States Senate, at least before cloture. So that gives an opportunity for an individual senator to represent his state that otherwise might be shut off by a bill being referred to the committee and never getting out of committee.
Okay. We do have another caller standing by. Charlie on the line, and Charlie, you are on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, Senator, I think you're a gentleman and a scholar. Always have.
Well, thank you.
This XL pipeline might go out of business because OPEC is lowering the price of the oil so bad. Would you consider subsidizing those people so they can keep going and keeping the jobs going?
No, but I don't think you have to worry about them going out of business because let's see, about 90, there's 830 barrels a day can go through the pipeline. About 700,000 are going to be Canadian oil and 100,000 American oil. So the Canadians have said that they will be able to continue to produce oil from the tar sands even when oil is below $50 a barrel. So I don't think you have to worry about them going out of business. But no, we shouldn't subsidize.
That's great.
Okay, Charlie, thanks for the call. As long as we're on that oil subject, ethanol, Senator, anything you anticipate coming up on ethanol this year?
I think we're going to have to defend what we call the ethanol mandate or the renewable fuel standard, which requires 10% ethanol or about 14 billion gallons of ethanol every year to be mixed with 100% gasoline. So it's 90% gasoline, 10% ethanol. There's people already out to strike that, and we'll have to work hard to defend it. I hope that we can defend it from the proposition that one of two things: either we leave things the way they are now and help both alternative energy as well as the regular petroleum industry, or else we tackle subsidies to the oil companies as well as so that we maintain a level playing field, is the best way to put it, for all sources of energy.
Okay. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about courts and technology. Recently, you had come out, I believe, talking about perhaps, I think it's probably more broadcast coverage of some of the courts. Is that right?
Well, you know, I've been an advocate for television in the federal courtrooms, like 46 out of 50 states have. It's worked very well. One of two things. One, or several reasons for doing it. Maybe the best reason is, under the Constitution, public has access to the courtroom, so you don't have closed judicial proceedings like you used to have star chamber proceedings under the King of England. That's why the Constitution was written that way. And access to the courtroom can be physically present or through television. And we don't do that in the federal courtroom. We've had some experiments that seem to have worked. Pardon me, I got a cough. Anyway, it gives everybody access to the courtroom. It also will tend to make judges more responsible and less dictatorial, hopefully.
Okay.
And thirdly, educating the public about the judicial system seems to be a good offshoot of that, and that we ought to do it for the educational reasons, the same reason that Congress is now televised for the last 25 years.
Well, and you know, and I do too, you know, a better educated public, you make better decisions on what you do to go forward. Senator, we do have another caller standing by. We do have Paul on the line, and Paul, you are on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Senator Grassley, I know your position on Keystone Pipeline. I noticed in the paper there was another bill called Oil Spill Liability in reference to the Keystone Pipeline, and I was wondering what your position on that bill that passed the House, and if you are opposed to it, I'd like to know why.
Well, I think I heard his question. You want to repeat it for me so I make sure I heard it?
He would like to know that if you are opposed to that bill of why you would be opposed to it on the, it was the spillage. Does that make sense, Senator?
Well, I don't know whether it limits the lawsuits or whether it... it is going to make it easier to sue. But I think right now the present ability to sue is almost open-ended. All you got to do is look at what happened in the Gulf 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
And those lawsuits are going on. And British Petroleum is spending billions of dollars already, and they still got lawsuits that they haven't settled. And they've even lost some in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals that said, for instance, there was somebody, BP brought a case that said there ought to be a direct harm to somebody if they have to pay that person. And either the law or court cases said there can be an indirect impact and you still have to pay. And so there's some argument that a lot of people are getting paid even if they weren't hurt by the oil spill. And so BP appealed that, and they lost in appeal. So it seems to me like it's pretty darn easy to sue for oil spill.
You know, and that just brings up a question, too, you know, in our litigious society here. Senator, would you imagine there would be overall any legislation coming forward that would start to limit some of these lawsuits? And as you mentioned, and you know, and I do, too, there's a lot of frivolous lawsuits that are out there. And, you know, to maybe even just stop the flow of people from suing, not that, you know, when there isn't a real concern, but when there is something that's just frivolous.
Well, first of all, I would start by saying that I don't think Charlie ask a question about frivolous lawsuits.
Right.
And I'll bet you Charlie would also agree that you shouldn't have frivolous lawsuits. You should have lawsuits with substance. And the answer to your question is yes, there ought to be legislation limiting frivolous lawsuits. And the best way to do that is let the lawsuit be filed. But if the person filing the lawsuit loses, then let them pay the cost of the defense.
Okay. Senator, I want to ask you a little bit of a question here, some information that you and Senator Dianne Feinstein had some concerns on the Obama administration's approach to illicit drug control, that it might damage U.S. standing worldwide and undermining the U.S. international obligations. Well, tell me what this is all about.
Sure. They've taken some action that would be contrary to a U.N. treaty on the trafficking of drugs. And we think that that sends the wrong signal, first of all, and it violates the treaty obligations we have under the United States treaty, and that it's going to encourage greater trafficking in drugs.
Okay. Senator, the president came out with a proposal last week to fund community colleges for students for free, 75% being paid for from federal government, 25% from the states. First off, overall, what do you think of this proposal?
Well, wouldn't it be unfair to pay people to go to community colleges for their freshman and sophomore year and not pay people to go to four-year colleges for their freshman and sophomore year? The other thing is, that's a question I have about it.
Right.
And the other thing is, they don't have any idea what this costs. And to set up another entitlement program when you have an $18 trillion deficit seems to be the wrong direction to go. And I think that that the president probably is legitimate raising the question about the high cost of higher education. But part of the problem for students is, quote, the high cost of higher education. In other words, I read recently in the Wall Street Journal that one university has one administrator for every 3.5 students. Mm. We've seen a dramatic increase in the hiring of administrators at universities, and we found a reduction in the number of hours that professors have in the classroom. We've also found a dilution of the quality of teaching through that, through almost 60% of the classes being taught by adjunct professors. And so we ought to look at the cost of education and see what we can do about making education more efficient.
Well, and one of my, I guess, questions and concerns would have been the infrastructure, too, that if you are going to put a whole bunch of more students, which I say, you know, educate as many people as possible, but you also then have to have teachers, you have to have either buildings or some kind of a mechanism by which these students are going to learn, a system that is not set up for this. And plus you have states who are now apparently going to have to pony up 25% of the cost as well, and some states who are not, as you know, Senator, not in as great a financial shape as the state of Iowa here.
Other states should do what Iowa's going to do. They're already working on more efficiency at the universities, but it's up to this point, it has basically shied away from study of the delivery of instruction, and that's their next step. And I'll bet you Iowa will find ways of saving a lot of money at our three Regents universities.
All righty. Well, Senator, as always, our time goes very quickly, but I appreciate you joining us here today, and hopefully we will talk to you again next month.
Yeah, thank you very much. Be glad to be with you.
Great. And again, Iowa folks, that was Iowa Senator Charles Grassley.